Welcome back to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. My next guest made headlines earlier this month, not for her science exactly, but for the fact that the EPA told her she couldn't present that science at a conference about the future of Narragansett Bay. The New York Times broke that story, and the EPA never said why they made that decision. But many assumed it was because climate change would be a major theme. A week later, though, she was allowed to present her research at a different conference, and it got us wondering what it's like to be a government researcher when your science is caught in the political crosshairs. Autumn Oskowski is a research ecologist in EPA's National Health and Environmental Effects Research Laboratory. Autumn, welcome to Living Lab Radio.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm having a bit of a fangirl moment. This is pretty exciting.
You study the effect of nutrients, in particular excess nutrients from human activities, whether that's fertilizers or, you know, sewage, on coastal ecosystems. What are some of the big questions that you're trying to answer?
Well, I mean, in general, my research looks at human impacts on coastal ecosystems. And like you said, a lot of the work is focused on nitrogen, trying to understand how human sources of nitrogen from sewage or agriculture or urban runoff impact coastal food webs. And so some of my research questions, so in Narragansett Bay, we have this, well, as a scientist, my perspective is a pretty cool natural experiment going on where most of the sewage treatment plants discharging to the bay have upgraded to start removing nitrogen. And so over a fairly short period of time, we've removed about half of the nitrogen from sewage. Half of the nitrogen coming into the bay from sewage has been just pulled out of the system. And so it's been one of the big research questions is how is the bay ecosystem responding? How are the plants and the animals responding to those reductions? Are we seeing improved water quality? Where? What does it look like? How do you measure it? Things like that.
And does that research on the impact of nutrients or the removal of nutrients, in this case, from an ecosystem, is that influenced by climate change, by changes in water temperature, by changes in weather on land, rainfall, anything like that?
Right. So that's where things get interesting because baselines are always shifting. So we're seeing warmer water temperatures over the past 50 years. It's maybe been about 2 to 3 degree increase on average annually in water temperatures. And so when you're looking at things like long-term changes in nutrient sources, you have to consider them in terms of long-term changes in other things like the frequency of storms, winter water temperatures, changes in even in fish populations. Those things factor in. So we have fishing going on in the bay, and so we've seen shifts in species, and just trying to understand all of these different players that happen both dramatically and short-term, like these nutrient reductions, or maybe more long-term changes associated with water temperatures and storms and rain and things like that.
As we know all too well, in coastal Massachusetts, research like that, even if it seems like just basic how does an ecosystem work kind of research, can have political and financial repercussions, especially at the local level. You know, towns need to upgrade their sewage treatment plants, or in the case of Cape Cod, they need to start creating perhaps sewage treatment plants. And so things get a little contentious at the local level. But did you ever think that your science would get caught up in the national politics?
No. We work so hard as scientists doing this research, and, you know, it's your life's work. And it's interesting because for the most part as scientists, there's no expectation. I mean, we obviously hope that we make an impact, we make a change, and people are interested in using our science. But there's really not that much expectation. And I think my colleagues would agree that what we do in our individual research projects and trajectories would play out on a broader, more national scale. And I will say, too, that, yeah, on Cape Cod in particular, some of those non-point source nitrogen questions are sticky and interesting. And that's one thing that the EPA has been doing is really trying to, at least at the research level, is trying to work and bring on board decision scientists and social scientists and economists to help with some of those challenges.
I'm talking with EPA scientist Autumn Oskowski. So the story that the New York Times broke a few weeks ago, that you and two colleagues were informed fairly last minute that you would not be allowed to present your research at the Narragansett Bay and Watershed Conference, where you had been a co-author on a big report about the state of Narragansett Bay. What happened there? Were you just suddenly told, you know, you were planning on presenting and suddenly you were told, no, that can't happen?
I'm not sure how much I'm allowed to comment on that. I think my understanding is that there was a misunderstanding and that I've been told that that won't happen going forward.
Well, and basically the next week you were allowed to present at another conference, right?
Right, at this Coastal and Estuarine Research Federation meeting in Providence. And so this is a huge meeting for colleagues in my field. And I was actually one of the co-organizers of the meeting. And we had about 1,600 coastal and estuarine research scientists and managers from all over the world there. And so I did present.
To those outside the sciences, going to a conference and presenting your research may sound like, you know, that's a cool thing. It's probably a fun thing. It's a chance to see colleagues. It's a chance to, you know, get your work in front of other people. But is it critical? I mean, is it really that big a deal if you're not allowed to present at one of these conferences?
I think all of those things you said are true. Scientists, like I always joke with friends that like a scientist, we're not always the greatest communicators with each other and with the public. And so these conferences really are critical to start some of these conversations, understand what you're doing and communicating that, but also understanding what other people are doing and finding those common grounds and building those research networks.
For people outside the EPA, this, you know, change of plans where you weren't allowed to present at one conference kind of struck a chord because it seemed like it was part of a bigger picture. There have been some pretty dramatic changes at the higher levels in the EPA. And I'm wondering if, as a research scientist, you see changes going on around you in your day-to-day, or if things are pretty much the same and you're just, you know, still head down and doing your research.
I think it's really more of the latter. I am head down and doing my research. Where I work, it's a building full of, so my Atlantic Ecology Division, it's a research lab, and so we do primary research. And so we are just still really working hard to develop those research questions that respond to states' needs and the agency's needs and just keep on going. That's, for better or worse, science is slow and iterative, and we just keep chugging along.
I'm talking with EPA scientist Autumn Oskowski. I'm curious what drew you to the EPA. I mean, you finish your PhD, you're looking for a job. Why EPA as opposed to maybe just going to a research university?
Right. So I actually was, I mean, I think that I was very much being groomed in during my doctorate for an academic post, an academic position. And for those of you who aren't in the sciences, there's positions are can be tough to get. So you give up your 20s to get these advanced degrees, and you love what you do; it's your passion. But it can be very hard to find that next job and that next step. And so, at the time, I was interviewing for jobs, and this job presented itself. And I mean, most of us would love to have one of these research positions, but they tend not to present themselves. There really aren't very many, and so it was just an opportunity that I was able to seize. Working at the EPA, I joke with my supervisor. We always say, you know, I'll say, I'm really, you know, irritated about this point, but I'm still the happiest person in the building. It's a wonderful opportunity to be able to just really focus on research. And if that's what you love and that's where your interests primarily lie, this is a perfect position for that.
The EPA lab where you work does work quite closely with academic colleagues around New England. How much contact, if any, had you had perhaps when you were in graduate school with EPA researchers and you know, how much of a sense maybe of what it was like to work at EPA did you have before you actually went there?
I had a good sense. So I got my PhD at the Graduate School of Oceanography, which is right next door. When I moved about 100 yards north to the next building. And so I had worked closely with a number of EPA colleagues while I was in graduate school. So I had a great sense, and it's a different climate in a research lab like the EPA. It's very, very welcoming and warm, and you have really smart, knowledgeable people who are able to really, you know, talk to you about your science and address these research questions. So if I have a question about statistics, I know a couple colleagues I can just walk up and ask, and they'll stop what they're doing and have a nice conversation with me about that. And that's not always the same everywhere.
Did you have any concerns as you were making this career choice that a government agency might be a place where science and politics might bump up against each other in uncomfortable ways?
Not at the research level. No, that didn't even occur to me.
Have the events of the past month changed that for you at all?
I don't know. I'm not sure how to answer that. I think that ultimately good, solid research that's well done is always going to be accepted, is fine, is not an issue. I don't know how else to say that. I'm proud of the products I produce. I think that no matter what happens, good, solid science always has a place. Maybe that's a better way to phrase that.
Anna Moskowski is a research ecologist in EPA's National Health and Environmental Effects Research Laboratory. She's one of three EPA scientists who were barred from attending a recent conference about Narragansett Bay. Autumn, thanks for talking with us.
Thank you for having me.
Until next week, this is Living Lab Radio. In the meantime, you can connect with us on Facebook and Twitter. I'm Heather Goldstone. Thanks for listening.
Living Lab Radio is produced by WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio in Boston. It's produced by me, Elsa Partan, and Heather Goldstone is executive producer. Funding for Living Lab Radio comes from the Candida Fund, investing in transformative leaders and ideas. Theme music by Stellwagen Symphonette.